This is Audible.
Recorded Books and RB Digital present A Court of Frost and Starlight by Sarah J. Maas, narrated by Amanda Lee Cobb. Chapter 1. Feyre. The first snow of winter had begun whipping through Valaris an hour earlier. The ground had finally frozen solid last week, and by the time I'd finished devouring my breakfast of toast and bacon, washed down with a heady cup of tea, the pale cobblestones were dusted with fine white powder. I had no idea where Rhys was. He hadn't been in bed when I'd awoken, the mattress on his side already cold. Nothing unusual, as we were both busy to the point of exhaustion these days. Seated at the long cherrywood dining table at the townhouse, I frowned at the whirling snow beyond the leaded glass windows. Once I had dreaded that first snow, had lived in terror of long, brutal winters. But it had been a long, brutal winter that had brought me so deep into the woods that day nearly 2 years ago. A long, brutal winter that had made me desperate enough to kill a wolf, that had eventually led me here. To this life, this happiness. The snow fell, thick clumps plopping onto the dried grass of the tiny front lawn, crusting the spikes and arches of the decorative fence beyond it. Deep inside me, rising with every swirling flake, a sparkling crisp power stirred. I was High Lady of the Night Court, yes, but also one blessed with the gifts of all the courts. It seemed winter now wanted to play. Finally awake enough to be coherent, I lowered the shield of black adamant guarding my mind and cast a thought down the soul bridge between me and Rhys. Where'd you fly off to so early? My question faded into blackness, a sure sign that Rhys was nowhere near Valaris, likely not even within the borders of the Night Court. Also not unusual, he'd been visiting our war allies these months to solidify our relationships, build trade, and keep tabs on their post-wall intentions. When my own work allowed it, I often joined him. I scooped up my plate, draining my tea to the dregs, and padded toward the kitchen. Playing with ice and snow could wait. Nuala was already preparing for lunch at the work table. No sign of her twin, Caradwyn, but I waved her off as she made to take my dishes. I can wash them, I said by way of greeting. Up to the elbows and making some sort of meat pie, the half-wraith gave me a grateful smile and let me do it. A female of few words, though neither twin could be considered shy. Certainly not when they worked, spied, for both Rhys and Asriel. It's still snowing, I observed rather pointlessly, peering out the kitchen window at the garden beyond as I rinsed off the plate, fork, and cup. Elaine had already readied the garden for winter, veiling the more delicate bushes and beds with burlap. I wonder if it'll let up at all. Nuala laid the ornate lattice crust atop the pie and began pinching the edges together, her shadowy fingers making quick, deft work of it. It'll be nice to have a white solstice, she said, voice lilting and yet hushed, full of whispers and shadows. Some years, it can be fairly mild. Right. The winter solstice. In a week. I was still new enough to being High Lady that I had no idea what my formal role was to be. If we'd have a High Priestess do some odious ceremony, as Ianthe had done the year before. A year. Gods. Nearly a year since Rhys had called in his bargain, desperate to get me away from the poison of the Spring Court, to save me from my despair. Had he been only a minute later, the mother knew what would have happened, where I'd now be. Snow swirled and eddied in the garden, catching in the brown fibers of the burlap covering the shrubs. My mate, who had worked so hard and so selflessly, all without hope that I would ever be with him. We had both fought for that love, bled for it. Rhys had died for it. I still saw that moment in my sleeping and waking dreams. How his face had looked. How his chest had not risen. How the bond between us had shredded into ribbons. I still felt it. That hollowness in my chest where the bond had been. Where he had been. Even now, with that bond again flowing between us like a river of star-flecked night, the echo of its vanishing lingered. drew me from sleep, drew me from a conversation, a painting, a meal. Rhys knew exactly why there were nights when I would cling tighter to him, why there were moments in the bright, clear sunshine that I would grip his hand. He knew because I knew why his eyes sometimes turned distant, why he occasionally just blinked at all of us, as if not quite believing it, and rubbed his chest as if to ease an ache. Working had helped, both of us. Keeping busy, keeping focused. I sometimes dreaded the quiet, idle days when all those thoughts snared me at last, when there was nothing but me in my mind, and that memory of Rhys lying dead on the rocky ground, the King of Highburn snapping my father's neck, all those Illyrians blasted out of the sky and falling to earth as ashes. Perhaps one day, even the work wouldn't be a battlement to keep the memories out. Mercifully, plenty of work remained for the foreseeable future, rebuilding Valaris after the attacks from Highburn being only one of many monumental tasks, for other tasks required doing as well, both in Valaris and beyond it, in the Illyrian Mountains, in the Hewn City, in the vastness of the entire Night Court. And then there were the other courts of Prithian, and the new emerging world beyond. But for now, Solstice, the longest night of the year. I turned from the window to Nuala, who was still fussing over the edges of her pie. "It's a special holiday here as well, right?" I asked casually. "Not just in winter and day, and spring." "Oh, yes," Nuala said, stooping over the work table to examine her pie. Skilled spy, trained by Asriel himself, and master cook. "We love it dearly. It's intimate, warm, lovely. Presents and music and food, sometimes feasting under the starlight." The opposite of the enormous, wild, days-long party I'd been subjected to last year. But presents? I had to buy presents for all of them. Not had to, but wanted to. Because all of my friends, now my family, had fought and bled and nearly died as well. I shut out the image that tore through my mind. Nesta, leaning over a wounded Cassian, the two of them prepared to die together against the King of Highburn. My father's corpse behind them. I rolled my neck. We could use something to celebrate. It had become so rare for all of us to be gathered for more than an hour or two. Nuala went on. "It's a time of rest, too, and a time to reflect on the darkness, how it lets the light shine." "Is there a ceremony?" The half-wraith shrugged. "Yes, but none of us go. It's more for those who wish to honor the light's rebirth, usually by spending the entire night sitting in absolute darkness." A ghost of a smirk. "It's not quite such a novelty for my sister and me, or for the High Lord." I tried not to look too relieved that I wouldn't be dragged to a temple for hours as I nodded. Setting my clean dishes to dry on the little wooden rack beside the sink, I wished Nuala luck on lunch and headed upstairs to dress. Caradwyn had already laid out clothes, but there was still no sign of Nuala's twin as I donned the heavy charcoal sweater, the tight black leggings, the fleece-lined boots before loosely braiding back my hair. A year ago I'd been stuffed into fine gowns and jewels, made to parade in front of a preening court who'd gawked at me like a prized breeding mare. Here, I smiled at the silver and sapphire band on my left hand, the ring I'd won for myself from the weaver in the wood. My smile faded a bit. I could see her, too. See Striga standing before the King of Highburn, covered in the blood of her prey, as he took her head in his hands and snapped her neck, then threw her to his beasts. I clenched my fingers into a fist, breathing in through my nose, out through my mouth, until the lightness in my limbs faded, until the walls of the room stopped pressing on me. Until I could survey the blend of personal objects in Rhys's room, our room. It was by no means a small bedroom, but it had lately started to feel tight. The rosewood desk against one wall was covered in papers and books from both of our own dealings. My jewelry and clothes now had to be divided between here and my old bedroom. And then there were the weapons. Daggers and blades, quivers and bows. I scratched my head at the heavy, wicked-looking mace that Rhys had somehow dumped beside the desk without my noticing. I didn't even want to know. though I had no doubt Cassian was somehow behind it. We could, of course, store everything in the pocket between realms, but... I frowned at my own set of Illyrian blades, leaning against the towering armoire. If we got snowed in, perhaps I'd use the day to organize things, find room for everything. Especially that mace. It would be a challenge, since Elaine still occupied a bedroom down the hall. Nesta had chosen her own home across the city, one that I opted to not think about for too long. Lucian, at least, had taken up residence in an elegant apartment down by the river the day after he'd returned from the battlefields, and the Spring Court. I hadn't asked Lucian any questions about that visit to Tamlin. Lucian hadn't explained the black eye and cut lip, either. He'd only asked Rhys and me if we knew of a place to stay in Valaris, since he did not wish to inconvenience us further by staying at the townhouse and did not wish to be isolated at the House of Wind. He hadn't mentioned Elaine, or his proximity to her. Elaine had not asked him to stay or to go, and whether she cared about the bruises on his face, she certainly hadn't let on. But Lucian had remained, and found ways to keep busy, often gone for days or weeks at a time. Yet even with Lucian and Nesta staying in their own apartments, the townhouse was a bit small these days. Even more so if Moore, Cassian, and Asriel stayed over. And the House of Wind was too big, too formal, too far from the city proper. Nice for a night or two, but I loved this house. It was my home, the first I'd really had in the ways that counted. And it'd be nice to celebrate the solstice here, with all of them, crowded as it might be. I scowled at the pile of papers I had to sort through. Letters from other courts, priestesses angling for positions, and kingdoms, both human and fairy. I'd put them off for weeks now, and had finally set aside this morning to wade through them. High Lady of the Night Court, Defender of the Rainbow and the... Desk. I snorted, flicking my braid over a shoulder. Perhaps my solstice gift to myself would be to hire a personal secretary. Someone to read and answer those things. To sort out what was vital and what could be put aside. Because a little extra time to myself? For Rhys? I'd look through the court budget that Rhys never really cared to follow and see what could be moved around for the possibility of such a thing. For him and for me. I knew our coffers ran deep. Knew we could easily afford it and not make so much as a dent in our fortune. But I didn't mind the work. I loved the work, actually. This territory, its people, they were as much my heart as my mate. Until yesterday, nearly every waking hour had been packed with helping them, until I'd been politely, graciously told to go home and enjoy the holiday. In the wake of the war, the people of Valaris had risen to the challenge of rebuilding and helping their own. Before I'd even come up with an idea of how to help them, multiple societies had been created to assist the city. So I'd volunteered with a handful of them for tasks ranging from finding homes for those displaced by the destruction, to visiting families affected during the war, to helping those without shelter or belongings ready for the winter with new coats and supplies. All of it was vital. All of it was good, satisfying work. And yet, there was more. There was more that I could do to help. Personally, I just hadn't figured it out yet. It seemed I wasn't the only one eager to assist those who'd lost so much. With the holiday, a surge of fresh volunteers had arrived, cramming the public hall near the Palace of Thread and Jewels where so many of the societies were headquartered. "Your help has been crucial, lady," one charity matron had said to me yesterday. "You have been here nearly every day. You have worked yourself to the bone. Take the week off. You've earned it. Celebrate with your mate." I'd tried to object, insisting that there were still more coats to hand out, more firewood to be distributed. But the fairy had just motioned to the crowded public hall around us, filled to the brim with volunteers. "We have more help than we know what to do with." When I'd tried objecting again, she shooed me out the front door and shut it behind me. Point taken. The story had been the same at every other organization I'd stopped by yesterday afternoon. Go home and enjoy the holiday. So I had. At least the first part. The enjoying bit, however. Rhys's answer to my earlier inquiry about his whereabouts finally flickered down the bond, carried on a rumble of dark, glittering power. "I'm at Devlin's camp. It took you this long to respond? It was a long distance to the Illyrian Mountains, yes, but it shouldn't have taken minutes to hear back. A sensual huff of laughter.
Cassian was ranting. He didn't take a breath.
My poor Illyrian baby. We certainly do torment you, don't we? Reese's amusement rippled toward me, caressing my innermost self with night-veiled hands. But it halted, vanishing as quickly as it had come.
Cassian's getting into it with Devlin. I'll check in later.
With a loving brush against my senses, he was gone. I'd get a full report about it soon, but for now, I smiled at the snow waltzing outside the windows. Chapter 2. Rhysand.
It was barely 9 in the morning, and Cassian was already pissed. The watery winter sun tried and failed to bleed through the clouds looming over the Illyrian Mountains. The wind boom across the gray peaks. Snow already lay inches deep over the bustling camp, a vision of what would soon befall Valaris. It had been snowing when I departed at dawn. Perhaps there would be a good coating already on the ground by the time I returned. I hadn't had a chance to ask Feyre about it during our brief conversation down the bond minutes ago, but perhaps she would go for a walk with me through it. Let me show her how the City of Starlight glistened under fresh snow. Indeed, my mate and city seemed a world away from the hive of activity in the Windhaven camp, nestled in a wide, high mountain pass. Even the bracing wind that swept between the peaks, bellying the camp's very name by whipping up dervishes of snow, didn't deter the Illyrians from going about their daily chores. For the warriors, training in the various rings that opened onto a sheer drop to the small valley floor below, those not present out on patrol. For the males who hadn't made the cut, tending to various trades, whether merchants or blacksmiths or cobblers, and for the females, drudgery. They didn't see it as such. None of them did. But their required tasks, whether old or young, remained the same. Cooking, cleaning, child-rearing, clothes-making, laundry. There was honor in such tasks, pride and good work to be found in them, but not when every single one of the females here was expected to do it. And if they shirked those duties, either one of the half-dozen camp mothers, or whatever males controlled their lives, would punish them. So it had been, as long as I'd known this place, for my mother's people. The world had been reborn during the war months before, the wall blasted to nothingness, and yet some things did not alter. Especially here, where change was slower than the melting glaciers scattered amongst these mountains. Traditions going back thousands of years, left mostly unchallenged. Until us. Until now. Drawing my attention away from the bustling camp beyond the edge of the chalk-lined training rings where we stood, I schooled my face into neutrality as Cassian squared off against Devlin. "The girls are busy with preparations for the solstice," the camp lord was saying, his arms crossed over his barrel chest. "The wives need all the help they can get, if it was to be ready in time. They can practice next week." I'd lost count of how many variations of this conversation we'd had during the decades Cassian had been pushing Devlin on this. The wind whipped Cassian's dark hair, but his face remained hard as granite, as he said to the warrior who had begrudgingly trained us. "The girls can help their mothers after training is done for the day. We'll cut practice down to 2 hours. The rest of the day will be enough to assist in the preparations."
Devlin slid his hazel eyes to where I lingered a few feet away.
"Is it an order?"
I held that gaze. And despite my crown, my power, I tried not to fall back into the trembling child I'd been 5 centuries ago, that first day Devlin had towered over me and then hurled me into the sparring ring. If Cassian says it's an order, then it is. It had occurred to me, during the years we'd been waging this same battle with Devlin and the Illyrians, that I could simply rip into his mind, all their minds, and make them agree. Yet there were some lines I could not, would not, cross. And Cassian would never forgive me. Devlin grunted, his breath a curl of steam.
"An hour." "2 hours,"
Cassian countered, wings flaring slightly, as he held a hard line that I'd been called in this morning to help him maintain. It had to be bad, then, if my brother had asked me to come. Really damn bad. Perhaps we needed a permanent presence out here, until the Illyrians remembered things like consequences. But the war had impacted us all, and with the rebuilding, with the human territories crawling out to meet us, with other Fey kingdoms looking toward a wall-less world and wondering what shit they could get away with, we didn't have the resources to station someone out here. Not yet. Perhaps next summer, if the climate elsewhere was calm enough. Devlin's cronies loitered in the nearest sparring ring, sizing up Cassian and me the same way they had our entire lives. We'd slaughtered enough of them in the Blood Rite all those centuries ago that they still kept back, but it had been the Illyrians who had bled and fought this summer, who had suffered the most losses as they took on the brunt of Highburn and the Cauldron. That any of the warriors survived was a testament to their skill and Cassian's leadership. But with the Illyrians isolated and idle up here, that loss was starting to shape itself into something ugly, dangerous. None of us had forgotten that day during Amarantha's reign. A few of the war bands had gleefully bowed to her, and I knew none of the Illyrians had forgotten that we'd spent those first few months after her downfall hunting down those rogue groups and ending them. Yes, a presence here was needed, but later. Devlin pushed, crossing his muscled arms.
The boys need a nice solstice after all they endured. Let the girls give one to them.
The bastard certainly knew what weapons to wield, both physical and verbal.
2 hours in the ring each morning,
Cassian said with that same hard tone that even I knew not to push, unless I wanted a flat-out brawl. He didn't break Devlin's gaze.
The boys can help decorate, clean, and cook. They've got 2 hands.
Some do, Devlin said. Some came home without one.
I felt, more than saw, the wound strike deep in Cassian. It was the cost of leading my armies. Each injury, death, scar, he took them all as his own personal failings. And being around these warriors, seeing those missing limbs and brutal injuries still healing, or that would never heal. They practice for 90 minutes, I said, soothing the dark power that began to roil in my veins, seeking a path into the world, and slid my chilled hands into my pockets. Cassian, wisely, pretended to look outraged, his wings spreading wide. Devlin opened his mouth, but I cut him off before he could shout something truly stupid.
1.5 hours every morning, then they do the housework, the males pitching in whenever they can.
I glanced toward the permanent tents and small stone and wood houses scattered along the wide pass and up into the tree-crusted peaks behind us. Do not forget that a great number of the females, Devlin, also suffered losses. Perhaps not a hand, but their husbands and sons and brothers were out on those battlefields. Everyone helps prepare for the holiday, and everyone gets to train.
I jerked my chin at Cassian,
indicating for him to follow me to the house across the camp that we now kept as our semi-permanent base of operations. There wasn't a surface inside where I hadn't taken Feyre, the kitchen table being my particular favorite, thanks to those raw initial days after we'd first mated, when I could barely stand to be near her and not be buried inside her. How long ago, how distant those days seemed. Another lifetime ago. I needed a holiday. Snow and ice crunched under our boots as we aimed for the narrow 2-level stone house by the tree line. Not a holiday to rest, not to visit anywhere, but just to spend more than a handful of hours in the same bed as my mate. To get more than a few hours to sleep and bury myself in her. It seemed to be one or the other these days, which was utterly unacceptable, and had turned me about 20 kinds of foolish. Last week had been so stupidly busy, and I'd been so desperate for the feel and taste of her, that I'd taken her during the flight down from the House of Wind to the townhouse, high above Valaris, for all to see if it weren't for the cloaking I had thrown into place. It required some careful maneuvering,
and I'd planned for months now on actually making a moment of it. But with her against me like that, alone in the skies, all it had taken was one look into those blue-gray eyes, and I was unfastening her pants. A moment later, I'd been inside her, and it nearly sent us crashing into the rooftops like an Illyrian whelp. Feyre had just laughed. I'd climaxed at the husky sound of it. It had not been my finest moment, and I had no doubt I'd sink to lower levels before the winter solstice brought us a day's reprieve. I choked my rising desire until it was nothing but a vague roaring in the back of my mind, and didn't speak until Cassian and I were nearly through the wooden front door. Anything else I should know about while I'm here? I knocked the snow from my boots against the doorframe and stepped into the house. The kitchen table lay smack in the middle of the front room. I banished the image of Feyre bent over it. Cassian blew out a breath and shut the door behind him, before tucking in his wings and leaning against it.
Dissensions brewing. With so many clans gathering for the solstice, it'll be a chance for them to spread it even more.
A flicker of my power had a fire roaring in the hearth, the small downstairs warming swiftly. It was barely a whisper of magic, yet its release eased that near-constant strain of keeping all that I was, all that dark power, in check. I took up a spot against that damned table and crossed my arms. We've dealt with this shit before. We'll deal with it again. Cassian shook his head, the shoulder-length dark hair shining in the watery light leaking through the front windows.
It's not like it was before. Before you, me, and Az. We were resented for what we are, who we are. But this time, we sent them to battle. I sent them, Rhys. And now it's not only the warrior pricks who are grumbling, but also the females. They believe you and I marched them south as revenge for our own treatment as children. They think we specifically stationed some of the males on the front lines as payback.
Not good. Not good at all. We have to handle this carefully, then. Find out where this poison comes from and put an end to it. Peacefully, I clarified when he lifted his brows. We can't kill our way out of this one. Cassian scratched at his jaw.
No, we can't.
It wouldn't be like hunting down those rogue war bands who'd terrorized any in their path. Not at all. He surveyed the dim house, the fire crackling in the hearth, where we'd seen my mother cook so many meals during our training. An old familiar ache filled my chest. This entire house, every inch of it, was full of the past.
A lot of them are coming in for the solstice, he went on. I can stay here, keep an eye on things. Maybe hand out presents to the children, some of the wives. Things that they really need but are too proud to ask for.
It was a solid idea, but it can wait. I want you home for solstice.
I don't mind.
I want you home in Valaris, I added when he opened his mouth to spew some Illyrian loyalist bullshit that he still believed, even after they had treated him like less than nothing his entire life. We're spending solstice together. All of us. Even if I had to give them a direct order as High Lord to do it. Cassian angled his head.
What's eating at you?
Nothing. As far as things went, I had little to complain about. Taking my mate to bed on a regular basis wasn't exactly a pressing issue, or anyone's concern but our own.
Wound a little tight, Rhys?
Of course he'd seen right through it. I sighed, frowning at the ancient soot-speckled ceiling. We'd celebrated the solstice in this house, too. My mother always had gifts for Azriel and Cassian. For the latter, the initial solstice we'd shared here had been the first time he'd received any sort of gift, solstice or not. I could still see the tears Cassian had tried to hide as he'd opened his presents, and the tears in my mother's eyes as she watched him. I want to jump ahead to next week.
Sure that power of yours can't do it for you?
I leveled a dry look at him. Cassian just gave me a cocky grin back. I never stopped being grateful for them. My friends, my family, who looked at that power of mine and did not balk, did not become scented with fear. Yes, I could scare the shit out of them sometimes, but we all did that to each other. Cassian had terrified me more times than I wanted to admit, one of them being mere months ago. Twice. Twice in the span of a matter of weeks, it had happened. I still saw him being hauled by Azrael off that battlefield, blood spilling down his legs into the mud, his wound a gaping maw that sliced down the center of his body. And I still saw him as Feyre had seen him, after she'd let me into her mind to reveal what exactly had occurred between her sisters and the King of Highburn. Still saw Cassian, broken and bleeding on the ground, begging Nesta to run. Cassian had not yet spoken of it, about what had occurred in those moments, about Nesta. Cassian and my mate's sister did not speak to each other at all. Nesta had successfully cloistered herself in some slummy apartment across the Sidra, refusing to interact with any of us save for a few brief visits with Feyre every month. I'd have to find a way to fix that, too. I saw how it ate away at Feyre. I still soothed her after she awoke, frantic from nightmares about that day in Highburn when her sisters had been made against their will. Nightmares about the moment when Cassian was near death and Nesta was sprawled over him, shielding him from that killing blow. And Elaine had taken up Azrael's dagger and killed the King of Highburn instead. I rubbed my brows between my thumb and forefinger. It's rough now. We're all busy, all trying to hold everything together. As Cassian and I had yet again postponed our annual 5 days of hunting up at the cabin this fall, put off for next year, again. Come home for solstice, and we can sit down and figure out a plan for the spring. Sounds like a festive event. With my court of dreams, it always was. But I made myself ask, is Devlin one of the would-be rebels? I prayed it wasn't true. I resented the male and his backwardness, but he'd been fair with Cassian, Azrael, and me under his watch. Treated us to the same rights as full-blooded Illyrian warriors. Still did that for all the bastard born under his command. It was his absurd ideas about females that made me want to throttle him. Missed him. But if he had to be replaced, the mother knew who would take his position. Cassian shook his head. I don't think so. Devlin shuts down any talk like that, but it only makes them more secretive, which makes it harder to find out who's spreading this bullshit around. I nodded, standing. I had a meeting in Cezir with the two priestesses who had survived Highburn's massacre a year ago regarding how to handle pilgrims who wanted to come from outside our territory. Being late wouldn't lend any favors to my arguments to delay such a thing until the spring. Keep an eye on it for the next few days, then come home. I want you there 2 nights before solstice and for the day after. A hint of a wicked grin. I assume our solstice day tradition will still be on then, despite you now being such a grown-up mated male. I winked at him. I'd hate for you Illyrian babies to miss me. Cassian chuckled. There were indeed some solstice traditions that never grew tiresome, even after the centuries. I was almost at the door when Cassian said, "Is..." He swallowed. I spared him the discomfort of trying to mask his interest. Both sisters will be at the house, whether they want to or not. Nesta will make things unpleasant if she decides she doesn't want to be there. She'll be there, I said, grinding my teeth. And she'll be pleasant. She owes Feyre that much. Cassian's eyes flickered. How is she? I didn't bother to put any sort of spin on it. Nesta is Nesta. She does what she wants, even if it kills her sister. I've offered her job after job, and she refuses them all. I sucked on my teeth. Perhaps you can talk some sense into her over solstice. Cassian's siphons gleamed atop his hands. It'd likely end in violence. It indeed would. Then don't say a word to her. I don't care. Just keep Feyre out of it. It's her day, too. Because this solstice, it was her birthday. 21 years old. It hit me for a moment how small that number was. My beautiful, strong, fierce mate shackled to me. I know what that look means, you bastard, Cassian said roughly. And it's bullshit. She loves you in a way I've never seen anybody love anyone. It's hard sometimes, I admitted, staring toward the snow-coated field outside the house, the training rings and dwellings beyond it. To remember that she picked it, picked me, that it's not like my parents, shoved together. Cassian's face turned uncharacteristically solemn, and he remained quiet for a moment before he said, "I get jealous sometimes. I never begrudge you for your happiness, but what you two have, Reese?" He dragged a hand through his hair, his crimson siphon glinting in the light streaming through the window. "It's the legends, the lies they spin us when we're children, about the glory and wonder of the mating bond. I thought it was all bullshit. Then you two came along." "She's turning 21. 21, Cassian." "So? Your mother was 18 to your father's 900. And she was miserable. Feyre is not your mother, and you are not your father." He looked me over. "Where is this coming from, anyway? Are things not good?" "The opposite, actually. I get this feeling," I said, pacing a step, the ancient wood floorboards creaking beneath my boots, my power a writhing living thing prowling through my veins, "that it's all some sort of joke, some sort of cosmic trick, and that no one, no one, can be this happy and not pay for it." "You've already paid for it, Reese. Both of you. And then some." I waved a hand. I trailed off, unable to finish the words. Cassian stared at me for a long moment. Then he crossed the distance between us, gathering me in an embrace so tight I could barely breathe. "You made it. We made it. You both endured enough that no one would blame you if you danced off into the sunset like Miriam and Draken and never bothered with anything else again. But you are bothering. You're both still working to make this peace last. Peace, Reese. We have peace, and the true kind. Enjoy it. Enjoy each other. You paid the debt before it was ever a debt." My throat tightened, and I gripped him hard around his wings, the scales of his leathers digging into my fingers. "What about you?" I asked, pulling away after a moment. "Are you happy?" Shadows darkened his hazel eyes. "I'm getting there." A half-hearted answer. I'd have to work on that, too. Perhaps there were threads to be pulled, woven together. Cassian jerked his chin toward the door. "Get going, you bastard. I'll see you in 3 days." I nodded, opening the door at last, but paused on the threshold. "Thanks, brother." Cassian's crooked grin was bright, even if those shadows still guttered in his eyes. "It's an honor, my lord." Chapter 3. Cassian. Cassian wasn't entirely certain that he could deal with Devlin and his warriors without throttling them. At least not for the next good hour or so. And since that would do little to help quell the murmurings of discontent, Cassian waited until Reese had winnowed out into the snow and wind before vanishing himself. Not winnowing, though that would have been one hell of a weapon against enemies in battle. He'd seen Reese do it with devastating results. As, too, in the strange way that As could move through the world without technically winnowing. He'd never asked. Asriel certainly had never explained. But Cassian didn't mind his own method of moving. Flying. It certainly had served him well enough in battle. Stepping out the front door of the ancient wooden house so that Devlin and the other pricks in the sparring rings would see him, Cassian made a good show of stretching. First his arms, honed and still aching to pummel in a few Illyrian faces. Then his wings, wider and broader than theirs. They'd always resented that. Perhaps more than anything else. He flared them until the strain along the powerful muscles and sinews was a pleasurable burn, his wings casting long shadows across the snow. And with a mighty flap, he shot into the gray skies. The wind was a roar around him, the temperature cold enough that his eyes watered, bracing, freeing. He flapped higher, then banked left, aiming for the peaks behind the camp pass. No need to do a warning sweep over Devlin and the sparring rings. Ignoring them, projecting the message that they weren't important enough to even be considered threats, were far better ways of pissing them off. Rhys had taught him that. Long ago. Catching an updraft that sent him soaring over the nearest peaks and then into the endless, snow-coated labyrinth of mountains that made up their homeland, Cassian breathed in deep. His flying leathers and gloves kept him warm enough, but his wings, exposed to the chill wind, the cold was sharp as a knife. He could shield himself with his siphons, had done it in the past, but today, this morning, he wanted that biting cold. Especially with what he was about to do, where he was going. He would have known the path blindfolded, simply by listening to the wind through the mountains, inhaling the smell of pine-crusted peaks below, the barren rock fields. It was rare for him to make the trek. He usually only did it when his temper was likely to get the better of him, and he had enough lingering control to know he needed to head out for a few hours. Today was no exception. In the distance, small dark shapes shot through the sky. Warriors on patrol. Or perhaps armed escorts leading families to their solstice reunions. Most High Fae believed the Illyrians were the greatest menace in these mountains. They didn't realize that far worse things prowled between the peaks. Some of them hunting on the winds. Some crawling out from deep caverns in the rock itself. Feyre had braved facing some of those things in the pine forests of the steppes. To save Rhys. Cassian wondered if his brother had ever told her what dwelled in these mountains. Most had been slain by the Illyrians or sent fleeing to those steppes. But the most cunning of them, the most ancient, they had found ways to hide, to emerge on moonless nights to feed. Even 5 centuries of training couldn't stop the chill that skittered down his spine as Cassian surveyed the empty, quiet mountains below and wondered what slept beneath the snow. He cut northward, casting the thought from his mind. On the horizon, a familiar shape took form, growing larger with each flap of his wings. Ramiel, the sacred mountain. The heart of not only Illyria, but the entirety of the Night Court. None were permitted on its barren, rocky slopes, save for the Illyrians, and only once a year at that, during the Blood Rite. Cassian soared toward it, unable to resist Ramiel's ancient summons. Different. The mountain was so different from the barren, terrible presence of the lone peak in the center of Prithian. Ramiel had always felt alive somehow, awake and watchful. He'd only set foot on it once, on that final day of the rite, when he and his brothers, bloodied and battered, had scaled its side to reach the onyx monolith at its summit. He could still feel the crumbling rock beneath his boots, hear the rasp of his breathing as he half-hauled Rhys up the slopes, Asriel providing cover beneath. As one, the three of them had touched the stone, the first to reach its peak at the end of that brutal week. The uncontested winners. The rite hadn't changed in centuries since. Early each spring, it still went on. Hundreds of warrior novices deposited across the mountains and forests surrounding the peak, the territory off-limits during the rest of the year to prevent any of the novices from scouting ahead for the best routes and traps to lay. There were varying qualifiers throughout the year to prove a novice's readiness, each slightly different depending on the camp, but the rules remained the same. All novices competed with wings bound, no siphons, a spell restraining all magic, and no supplies beyond the clothes on your back. The goal? Make it to the summit of that mountain by the end of that week, and touch the stone. The obstacles, the distance, the natural traps, and each other. Old feuds played out, new ones were born, scores were settled. A week of pointless bloodshed, as insisted. Rhys often agreed, though he often also agreed with Cassian's point. The Blood Rite offered an escape valve for dangerous tensions within the Illyrian community. Better to settle it during the rite than risk civil war. Illyrians were strong, proud, fearless. But peacemakers, they were not. Perhaps he'd get lucky. Perhaps the rite this spring would ease some of the malcontent. Hell, he'd offer to participate himself if it meant quieting the grumbling. They'd barely survived this war. They didn't need another one. not with so many unknowns gathering outside their borders. Ramiel rose higher still, a shard of stone piercing the gray sky, beautiful and lonely, eternal and ageless. No wonder that first ruler of the Night Court had made this his insignia. Along with the three stars that only appeared for a brief window each year, framing the uppermost peak of Ramiel like a crown. It was during that window when the rite occurred. Which had come first? The insignia or the rite? Cassian didn't know, had never really cared to find out. The conifer forests and ravines that dotted the landscape flowing to Ramiel's foot gleamed under fresh snow, empty and clean. No sign of the bloodshed that would occur come the start of spring. The mountain neared, mighty and endless, so wide that he might as well have been a mayfly in the wind. Cassian soared toward Ramiel's southern face, rising high enough to catch a glimpse of the shining black stone jutting from its top. Who had put that stone atop the peak, he didn't know either. Legend said it had existed before the Night Court formed, before the Illyrians migrated from the Myrmidons, before humans had even walked the earth. Even with the fresh snow crusting Ramiel, none had touched the pillar of stone. A thrill, icy and yet not unwelcome, flooded his veins. It was rare for anyone in the Blood Rite to make it to the monolith. Since he and his brothers had done it 5 centuries ago, Cassian could recall only a dozen or so who'd not only reached the mountain, but also survived the climb. After a week of fighting, of running, of having to find and make your own weapons and food, that climb was worse than every horror before it. It was the true test of will, of courage. To climb when you had nothing left. To climb when your body begged you to stop. It was when the breaking usually occurred. But when he'd touched the onyx monolith, when he'd felt that ancient force sing into his blood in the heartbeat before it had whisked him back to the safety of Devlin's camp, it had been worth it. To feel that. With a solemn bow of his head toward Ramiel and the living stone atop it, Cassian caught another swift wind and soared southward. An hour's flight had him approaching yet another familiar peak, one that no one but him and his brothers bothered to come to. What he'd so badly needed to see, to feel, today. Once, it had been as busy a camp as Devlin's. Once. Before a bastard had been born in a freezing lone tent on the outskirts of the village. Before they'd thrown a young unwed mother out into the snow only days after giving birth, her babe in her arms. And then taken that babe, mere years later, tossing him into the mud at Devlin's camp. Cassian landed on the flat stretch of Mountain Pass, the snowdrifts higher than at Windhaven, hiding any trace of the village that had stood there. Only cinders and debris remained anyway. He'd made sure of it. When those who had been responsible for her suffering and torment had been dealt with, no one had wanted to remain here a moment longer. Not with the shattered bone and blood coating every surface, staining every field and training ring. So they'd migrated, some blending into other camps, others making their own lives elsewhere. None had ever come back. Centuries later, he didn't regret it. Standing in the snow and wind, surveying the emptiness where he'd been born, Cassian didn't regret it for a heartbeat. His mother had suffered every moment of her too short life. It only grew worse after she'd given birth to him. Especially in the years after he'd been taken away. And when he'd been strong and old enough to come back to look for her, she was gone. They'd refused to tell him where she was buried, if they'd given her that honor, or if they'd thrown her body into an icy chasm to rot. He still didn't know. Even with their final, rasping breaths, those who'd made sure she never knew happiness had refused to tell him. Had spat in his face and told him every awful thing they'd done to her. He'd wanted to bury her in Valaris, somewhere full of light and warmth, full of kind people, far away from these mountains. Cassian scanned the snow-covered pass. His memories here were murky, mud and cold and 2 small fires. But he could recall a lilting soft voice and gentle, slender hands. It was all he had of her. Cassian dragged his hands through his hair, fingers catching on the wind-tangled snarls. He knew why he'd come here. Why he always came here. For all that Amryn taunted him about being an Illyrian brute, he knew his own mind, his own heart. Devlin was a fairer camp lord than most. But for the females who were less fortunate, who were preyed upon or cast out, there was little mercy. So training these women, giving them the resources and confidence to fight back, to look beyond their campfires, it was for her. For the mother buried here, perhaps buried nowhere. So it might never happen again. So his people, whom he still loved despite their faults, might one day become something more, something better. The unmarked, unknown grave in this pass was his reminder. Cassian stood in silence for long minutes before turning his gaze westward, as if he might see all the way to Valaris. Rhys wanted him home for the solstice, and he'd obey. Even if Nesta. Even in his thoughts, her name clanged through him, hollow and cold. Now wasn't the time to think of her, not here. He very rarely allowed himself to think of her anyway. It usually didn't end well for whoever was in the sparring ring with him. Spreading his wings wide, Cassian took a final glance around the camp he'd raised to the ground. Another reminder, too, of what he was capable of when pushed too far. To be careful, even when Devlin and the others made him want to bellow. He and Az were the most powerful Illyrians in their long bloody history. They wore an unprecedented 7 siphons each, just to handle the tidal wave of brute killing power they possessed. It was a gift and a burden that he'd never taken lightly. 3 days. He had 3 days until he was to go to Valaris. He'd try to make them count. Chapter 4. Feyre. The rainbow was a hum of activity, even with the drifting veils of snow. High fae and fairies alike poured in and out of the various shops and studios, some perched on ladders to string up drooping garlands of pine and holly between the lampposts, some sweeping gathered clusters of snow from their doorsteps, some, no doubt artists, merely standing on the pale cobblestones and turning in place, faces uplifted to the gray sky, hair and skin and clothes dusted with fine powder. Dodging one such person in the middle of the street, a fairy with skin like glittering onyx and eyes like swirling clusters of stars, I aim for the front of a small pretty gallery, its glass window revealing an assortment of paintings and pottery, the perfect place to do some solstice shopping. A wreath of evergreen hung on the freshly painted blue door, brass bells dangling from its center. The door, new. The display window, new. Both had been shattered and stained with blood months ago. This entire street had. It was an effort not to glance at the white-dusted stones of the street, sloping steeply down to the meandering Sidra at its base, to the walkway along the river, full of patrons and artists, where I had stood months ago and summoned wolves from those slumbering waters. Blood had been streaming down these cobblestones then, and there hadn't been singing and laughter in the streets, but screaming and pleading. I took a sharp inhale through my nose, the chilled air tickling my nostrils. Slowly, I released it in a long breath, watching it cloud in front of me. Watching myself in the reflection of the store window, barely recognizable in my heavy gray coat, a red and gray scarf that I'd pilfered from Moore's closet, my eyes wide and distant. I realized a heartbeat later that I was not the only one staring at myself. Inside the gallery, no fewer than 5 people were doing their best not to gawk at me as they browsed the collection of paintings and pottery. My cheeks warmed, heart a staccato beat, and I offered a tight smile before continuing on. No matter that I'd spotted a piece that caught my eye, no matter that I wanted to go in, I kept my gloved hands bundled in the pockets of my coat as I strode down the steep street, mindful of my steps on the slick cobblestones. While Valaris had plenty of spells upon it to keep palaces and cafes and squares warm during the winter, it seemed that for this first snow, many of them had been lifted, as if everyone wanted to feel its chill kiss. I'd indeed braved the walk from the townhouse, wanting to not only breathe in the crisp, snowy air, but to also just absorb the crackling excitement of those readying for solstice, rather than merely winnowing or flying over them. Though Rhys and Asriel still instructed me whenever they could, though I truly loved to fly, the thought of exposing sensitive wings to the cold made me shiver. Few people recognized me while I strode by, my power firmly restrained within me, and most too concerned with decorating or enjoying the first snow to note those around them anyway. A small mercy. Though I certainly didn't mind being approached. As High Lady, I hosted weekly open audiences with Rhys at the House of Wind. The requests ranged from the small, a phthalite lamppost was broken, to the complicated, could we please stop importing goods from other courts because it impacted local artisans. Some were issues Rhys had dealt with for centuries now, but he never acted like he had. No, he listened to each petitioner, asked thorough questions, and then sent them on their way with a promise to send an answer to them soon. It had taken me a few sessions to get the hang of it. The questions he used, the way he listened. He hadn't pushed me to step in unless necessary. He'd granted me the space to figure out the rhythm and style of these audiences and begin asking questions of my own, and then begin writing replies to the petitioners, too. Rhys personally answered each and every one of them. And I now did, too. Hence the ever-growing stack of paperwork and so many rooms of the townhouse. How he'd lasted so long without a team of secretaries assisting him, I had no idea. But as I eased down the steep slope of the street, the bright-colored buildings of the rainbow glowing around me like a shimmering memory of summer, I again mulled it over. Valaris was by no means poor. Its people mostly cared for, the buildings and streets well-kept. My sister, it seemed, had managed to find the only thing relatively close to a slum, and insisted on living there, in a building that was older than Rhys and in dire need of repairs. There were only a few blocks in the city like that. When I'd asked Rhys about them, about why they had not been improved, he merely said that he had tried, but displacing people while their homes were torn down and rebuilt? Tricky. I hadn't been surprised 2 days ago when Rhys had handed me a piece of paper and asked if there was anything else I would like to add to it. On the paper had been a list of charities that he donated to around solstice time. Everything from aiding the poor, sick, and elderly, to grants for young mothers to start their own businesses. I'd added only 2 items, both to societies that I'd heard about through my own volunteering. Donations to the humans displaced by the war with Highburn, as well as to Illyrian war widows and their families. The sums we allocated were sizable, more money than I'd ever dreamed of possessing. Once, all I had wanted was enough food, money, and time to paint. Nothing more. I would have been content to let my sisters wed, to remain and care for my father. But beyond my mate, my family, beyond being High Lady, the mere fact that I now lived here, that I could walk through an entire artist's quarter whenever I wished? Another avenue bisected the street midway down its slope, and I turned onto it, the neat rows of houses and galleries and studios curving away into the snow. But even amongst the bright colors, there were patches of gray, of emptiness. I approached one such hollow place, a half-crumbling building. Its mint-green paint had turned grayish, as if the very light had bled from the color as the building shattered. Indeed, the few buildings around it were also muted and cracked. A gallery across the street boarded up. A few months ago, I'd begun donating a portion of my monthly salary. The idea of receiving such a thing was still utterly ludicrous, to rebuilding the rainbow and helping its artists. But the scars remained on both these buildings and their residents, and the mound of snow-dusted rubble before me. Who had dwelled there? Worked there? Did they live? Or had they been slaughtered in the attack? There were many such places in Valaris. I'd seen them in my work, while handing out winter coats and meeting with families in their homes. I blew out another breath. I knew I lingered too often, too long at such sights. I knew I should continue on, smiling as if nothing bothered me, as if all were well. And yet...
They got out in time,
a female voice said behind me. I turned, boots slipping on the slick cobblestones. Throwing out a hand to steady me, I gripped the first thing I came into contact with, a fallen chunk of rock from the wrecked house. But it was the sight